And welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road, how are you? What's going on?
I'm all right. I think the attempt to murder today is by cooking. It is.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Michelle's like, what are you talking about? Are you? Michelle's trying to kill me.
Wait, I am.
It is 117 degrees right now.
Oh,
what? You're so confused.
Well, we're talking about the diet thing a lot, and I thought you meant like I'm going to kill today by like cooking, and I'm like that just made no sense.
You know, I did kill yesterday by cooking, though. Sorry, I made Greek chicken bowls.
Nice.
So maybe I'll start giving you guys daily reports of my cooking. It's you know, marinated grilled chicken, brown rice, cucumbers, feta, cherry tomatoes, olives, onions, and a bunch
that
of...
That sounded
no,
pretty
bad.
Good until the olives.
Olives, come on.
Oh, yeah,
we had
man.
This discussion yesterday.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
Gotta have it. Gotta have it. Yeah, it's funny because like at least two people in my house will pick them up, but I don't care. You should have olives on everything.
Look, when as a child you were tricked into believing that an olive is a grape, it really kind of changes your outlook on that for the rest of your life. I'd best be honest with you.
Maybe if we flipped it around, like, you know, like you think you're bracing yourself for an olive and then you eat a grape, would that like reverse the effect?
It might. I've never tried it.
All right. We'll see. Maybe like, you know, Halloween, you have like those bowls of grapes that are supposed to be eyeballs. Like maybe, we'll try to see if we can engineer that for you.
We'll see if we can make that work. We got a lot to get to on the show today. Madison Hawk will join us at 6:30 for the latest on all things Tennessee Vols as they are a few days into fall camp now. We'll get a report from Knoxville coming up at 6:30. The best and worst things at sports at 6:45. And then Joe Rexroad's favorite way to start the day, an early morning dose of Jared Stillman at 7 o'clock. So, Joe, I know you're very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, and he can, I guess he can gloat. Because Ian gifted him the victory in Jared versus Joe, which is always the case. If he wins, it's a gifted victory. So
correct.
Yeah. Poor Ian.
Poor Ian, for sure. Lots of interesting things that are going on in the world of sports. Joe, I want to touch on this really quickly. There's not really been anything that's happened on it yet, other than Yakov Trenin has gone through the arbitration process. Willie Donick is reporting also that it's going to be a two-year deal with Yakov Trenin. So we'll see what happens today. Nothing has been announced yet, but that was 2 days ago. So I would imagine at some point this morning, probably by the time we're off the air, but if not, certainly shortly after, there will be an announcement / decision on the actual contract for Yakov Trenin.
So Willie said on the show yesterday too. Oh, here we go. Yeah, I'm seeing. I'm going through Willie's. I missed this yesterday. All right, it was 2 days ago. Wow, I missed this 2 days ago. Well, I mean, 2 year deal. That to me, whatever the AAV is. I mean, unless it's stupid, it's not going to be stupid. I think it's a good thing for the Preds. You know, he's going to be good for the next 2 years.
Yeah, like he's going to be a good player. You know, I'm interested to see where the money comes in. There's pretty decent sized gap between the Predators and Trenin side of things, as there often is when you go to arbitration, because that's why you go to arbitration, because there's a pretty big gap. So we'll see where it ends up. My guess is it's going to be somewhere around 2 years and 1.8, 1.9, probably two.
Just shy of probably, two.
Probably in that range would be my guess at where this ends up, but we'll see. Maybe Yakov Trenin and his representatives put together a really good case and the Predators won the years, but he won the money. We'll see.
Yeah. I feel like it's a $1 million gap or whatever, right? Is it a little bit less than $1 million or two?
It was a little
two,
bit,
four,
it was a little bit more.
1-1, yeah. Like 1-1. Yeah. So you wonder how not contentious. That's not the right word, but obviously those hearings aren't fun. I wonder how. Maybe the language barrier helps in a situation like this.
Maybe so.
I don't know. You can't just like snipe back and forth. as easily. Yeah. Get it.
A little bit of effort's got to go into it. We'll see what happens on that front today. Joe, some big news yesterday in the NFL. We wondered if this was happening. I think we kind of thought that it probably would happen if you're Roger Goodell, but the NFL has appealed the 6-game suspension for Deshaun Watson, seeking a tougher penalty under the personal conduct policy, which gets into the, well, they're appealing basically to themselves. Roger Goodell is going to determine who's going to hear the appeal. So Roger Goodell, it's kind of now in his hands, and under the collective bargaining agreement, Goodell has the option to consider the appeal himself, or he can appoint a designee to do so. So it sounds like from the reporting that was out there yesterday, the league is still kind of pushing for maybe a year ban for Deshaun Watson. So I'm really interested to see where this ends up going. The 6 games, I think generally the reaction to the 6 games was, really, that's it? And now it sounds like there's going to be some more added on to it.
Yeah, I still, like, the whole thing, now that we're to this, like, it confuses me, you know. I just, like, I'm just trying to, I don't feel like the NFL now, it's coming across heavy-handed. Some really strong words about Watson, obviously seeking what I think would be a more appropriate punishment, but also, the information given to Sue L. Robinson was that of a half-hearted effort. So, you know, and apparently I'm reading, you know, Charles Robinson's piece on this that had some reporting that, you know, the NFL knew more than a month ago. Basically, Robinson told them that basically this was going to become way short of a year. The whole thing you go back to this whole thing. It's like, you know what? Why don't you, Goodell, just do it. Just give him a year. Forget. Yeah, I know there's reasons for the independent arbiter and all that stuff, but it's just a really kind of weird situation. And I don't know. I guess he's going to get a year or close to it. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting, and I saw Charles, among others, kind of point this out yesterday afternoon when all this came out. Apparently, Roger Goodell and the NFL really don't want him to be playing in that Houston game, and I think that Houston game's in week 12. So that 12-game number that's been thrown out there in terms of, I guess, the settlement that maybe they offered Deshaun Watson, apparently Roger Goodell and the NFL really have no desire for him to play against the Houston Texans. That's very important to them. So we'll see what happens on that front.
Yeah. That's, and if that's the case, it won't be, you know, satisfying. I think to the majority of people following this, I mean, it just seems to me like, you go on the text line and find someone saying innocent until proven guilty, and again remind them this is not a criminal proceeding. It's misconduct that is verified. But I feel like most people want Watson to have more punishment. That wouldn't be satisfying. It probably would at least cost the Browns on the field this year, if for whatever that's worth.
But I do wonder, like, the contract, and Jared brought this up yesterday, and I think it's a good point. Like, the contract that the Browns gave Deshaun Watson made a lot of people around the league mad.
Yeah.
And I think it probably made a lot of people in the league mad too, with the way it was structured. In terms of, you know, when it came out the other day that he was going to be suspended 6 games, you know, the fines or the money that he's missing is off his base salary, which I believe is $1 million next year.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Like, it's basically nothing that Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, it's structured so he doesn't take it, right? Yeah,
exactly. So I do wonder how much of that factors into of the league looking at the Browns and being like, yeah, screw you guys for giving him this contract. We're going to make this as harsh as we possibly can.
Yeah, well, and that's, it is a good point. I mean, Roger Goodell, you know, works for the owners. I mean, I guess hopefully he's listening to some more than, like, say, I don't know, like Stephen Ross and Daniel Snyder on this, yeah, or anything. But no, I mean, obviously, I would say most of the league. Now, more than a couple of those guys also were all in on trying to get him. So, you know, let's keep that in mind too. I mean, Cleveland was not on an island and being willing to take all the hits for pursuing Deshaun Watson. But I understand anyone else in the league being upset by this if this is how it turns out. So that's incentive for the NFL to push for this. It's just the whole process. Obviously, it's a different way of going about it. It's just strange to me. And now, what have we heard yet? Like, is Goodell, like, it's either Goodell or a designee who's going to hear this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to go all the way back in time and say, you know what? Give me a year. You had a chance to just do it. You screwed up these other proceedings in the past. You've taken a lot of crap for it. If you go ahead and just give them a year or an indefinite suspension or whatever and forget the independent arbitrator, then you've helped yourself and you've done the right thing for once.
We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on Deshaun Watson coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Madison Hawk from WBIR in Knoxville coming up at 6:30 for the latest on the Tennessee Vols. Right now, taking your thoughts on Deshaun Watson on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Wes in Clarksville throwing the question out there. Do you think Watson would have gotten guaranteed contract if he wasn't in this legal trouble? He basically got rewarded for the sick things that he did. This is coming from Wes in Clarksville.
That's one way to look at it, and I don't think it's an altogether bad way to look at it, Wes. His contract, the way it's structured, clearly – I mean, like we just talked about it, the way it's structured clearly, is related to the situation, right? It's trying to minimize.
His contract is basically like his agent wrote it. Like, it's basically like his agent drew it up, and the Browns just looked at it and said, yeah, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And nobody else was willing to go there. Like, it feels like there was zero pushback from the Browns on this at all.
Or at some point, it's just the realization, like, either this or someone else is going to get him, right?
Right.
The whole thing is pretty gross. On the contract front, and by the way, it's important to, as I said last time, it's important to note and remember in this new process, which has now been kind of undercut immediately, was collectively bargained. I mean, that's important to keep in mind. As with most things, that involve players, like it is collectively bargained. But the NFL has immediately, they've gone to this, and now they've immediately gone to, okay, well, we're going to, we're not going to respect the outcome. Which, of course, the NFLPA put out a statement the other day. We should go with this. This is the system. So the NFL is going into this new territory and reportedly seeking this, this year, and which would actually be indefinite because he'd have to reapply, or he'd have to apply for reinstatement. There is a fine, according to Charles. If it's the 12-game outcome, then they would try to fine him like $10.5 million. So, I mean, that's at least a decent hit. It's, guy with a $230 million guaranteed contract. But, that's something at least. If he does get the – it is important to note also if he gets the thing the NFL wants, apparently, the whole year – then the contract would basically bump a year. So his extension starts in 23, which the significance there is that, it would push it out a year, right? So, like, there'd be another year of earning power he wouldn't have. So, I mean, there's still some contract impact for him, financial impact for him, but it's still relatively minimal.
Now, it does have people asking the question, and – I heard Diana Rossini put this out there yesterday, and I know where Diana Rossini is getting it from. She's getting it from Deshaun Watson's people of, Well, this is going to be how the process plays out, and Roger Goodell is just going to take things into his own hands anyway. Well, then why are you even going through the independent arbitrator? Like, why is this a thing? As you pointed out, it is collectively bargained, but if he's just going to turn around and do whatever he wants to do anyway, why is this happening?
And that's the thing. For the future, for future situations like this, like they've kind of already, you know, diluted it, right? I mean, they've already, you know, basically say, okay, we'll go to this, but no, we don't like that. Okay, we're going to do our own thing. Now, in this case, again, I think most people want them to do their own thing. In this particular case, you know, I think most people, I think that's true. I mean, take Browns fandom out of it. Feel like this is not enough and that there should be more. And so, you know, it's a favorable move, but what does it mean in future cases? You know, it's almost like this independent arbitrator has already been, again, just sort of made toothless from the start.
Well, it was an interesting ruling from the standpoint of, you know, the statement that Sue L. Robinson put out, and I guess the report the other day, was listing all of these different things about how, you know, there was predatory behavior that definitely took place. You know, the guy egregious predatory behavior. Like, the guy can't even go to a massage therapist anymore that's not directly approved by the team. And you read through all that, and I know my reaction, and Joe, I think I could speak for you, yours was as well, was, all right, so you have all this information, and six games was the number that you came up with? Like, those two things don't quite add up. So hopefully, from the NFL side of thing, and really for all of our sakes, there's never a situation quite like this one again in the NFL that you have to go through here. But it is interesting that you've got all that information that came out in Sue L. Robinson's report. The number ends up being six games, and now the NFL is basically forced to say, you know what? Forget that. We're just going to do this ourselves.
And again, I just, you know, I don't understand why, if the NFL is as furious about this whole situation as some have reported, and, you know, the worst thing they've ever seen, all this stuff, then I don't understand why the NFL, and I don't know how much of a difference it would have made, but I do know that if you talk to four of the women, and media outlets are talking to 60 plus of the women, how do you let that happen? I don't understand. That to me reads like you don't really want this to be as severe as reported. I can't reconcile those two things, you know. And I think most people are somewhat cynical about the NFL and discipline, and in particular when it comes to you know, violence against women, as we've seen in the past as well. So that's where I just don't understand how they didn't do a better job. And you know, I do understand how the Browns did. Of course, we know, oh yeah, we looked into it. You didn't talk to anybody. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Right. You really looked into it. But that's the team that, of course, is willing to pay this much money for someone who did what Deshaun Watson did. But the NFL, I should have done a better job. Again, I don't know how much difference it makes for Sue L. Robinson. I think it should have. I think there was enough there anyway for her to have a different ruling. I don't understand some of the things she wrote with the outcome, but I also really have to question the NFL on their process in getting her all the information.
Well, we know the NFL is all about image as well. And look, you know, when that ruling came out the other day, were they preparing to appeal it immediately? Probably. But I would imagine the outcry that's taken place since then has probably influenced their decision as well. And I'll say this, now that this has all come out and that the NFL has decided to do this, I think the release of the information and the timing of the information of the Brian Flores stuff and Stephen Ross is pretty interesting too, because they threw that out there the day before they knew that they were going to do this. And now all of a sudden, nobody's talking about that. They're all talking about Deshaun Watson and appealing the six-game suspension. So
they know how to news dump.
Yeah, there's a method to the madness that the NFL's throwing out there.
Yeah, no, they know how to news dump. Yeah, and hey, when you have so many scandals going on at once, at least you can kind of do that, right? You can try to at least hide one of them or bury one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if there's anything imminent coming on Dan Snyder, they probably should have thrown that out there, you know, yesterday morning as well.
Yeah, right. But hey, I mean, who knows? He may be somewhere in the Caspian Sea at this point. I mean, I have no idea. So I guess what we're probably going to see probably is like a lawsuit from Watson.
I would think so.
I mean, that's probably the next thing. Whatever this is, it's going to be more. I'm still not convinced that it's going to be the year. Maybe it'll be like you said, the 12 game thing. But even that, I think Watson will probably sue. So this can go on and on.
It can go on and on. And meanwhile, we'll see what happens. Like if you're the Browns, like you had to know that an appeal was probably coming, right? So I'm really interested to see, kind of how they handle this moving forward. I mean, it's out of their hands at this point, but the other day they were semi-excited, I would guess, that it's a 6-game suspension and the schedule is really not that bad through the first 6 games and you'll have him back and maybe you can compete for the playoffs this year. And the more this goes, and look, I heard you guys on Jared versus Joe yesterday too. When Watson was scheduled to get back after the first 6 games, I mean, their schedule got pretty tough anyway. So it's no guarantee that they were just going to start rolling off wins when Watson got back. But now that this is, I think, definitely going to be longer than 6 games on the field, which is, again, I keep coming back to very, very difficult to talk about on the field stuff in this situation. But on the field, yeah, it's going to be, I think, pretty difficult for them to contend this year.
Yeah, and at some point, I am interested. Again, I'm with you talking about on the field stuff, but I am interested. I mean, if we're talking 2 full seasons or a season and most of another one, like, and then all of this stuff, like, what is he as a player? I mean, I think we know what he has been, but what is he moving forward? I mean, it's an interesting question. All I know is that, well, we have best and worst in sports coming up. There's so many options, but I'm a contender for worst. An early contender is like the day this is handed down, like Watson and like all these Browns fans and everything. And he's I don't know, man. It was hard to watch. That's just me, but it was hard to watch.
It was pretty gross. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Madison Hawk from WBIR in Knoxville. We'll get her thoughts on all things Tennessee Vols as they're a few days into fall camp up there with Josh Heupel and company. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Madison Hawk from WBIR in Knoxville. Madison, what's going on? Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be on.
Well, we appreciate you being with us. So, Madison, I'm just interested from your vantage point with fall camp beginning, with Josh Heupel and the success that he had in year one. What's your sense of the excitement level from Tennessee fans with this team this year as fall camp begins?
Yeah, well, without sounding too cliche, I think a lot of players in this organization, a lot of coaches are just taking a deep breath because a lot of these guys, as you said, they had success. They got a taste of success in 2021. And now they know the ins and outs of the playbook. They know the system. They know what their coaches are expecting of them. And you can tell that they've been much more loose this fall camp. And I think that starts at the quarterback position. We know who QB1 is going to be. We know that's Hendon Hooker, and they're not having to split the reps with Joe Milton. So I think the team at each position group knows who their leader is, knows who some of the veterans are that they're turning to. Because you remember this time last year, there were a lot of questions around this program, right? When Josh Heupel and his coaching staff inherited under former head coach Jeremy Pruitt, it was, for lack of a better term, a mess. And so there was a lot of question marks. And this year, there's just a lot of confidence. I talked to a lot of the players on Sunday, and they said they were excited Sunday morning, knowing that camp was 24 hours away. And they said they weren't even really nervous. They were just, it was all excitement and just kind of knowing what to expect, knowing the system. And you've definitely seen them play more confident, more calm at practice this week. And you know, we're only allowed to watch about two periods. Joe, I think you were there Monday, and we got a little bit more. We got about eight periods, but now it's just been period one and two. So it's been about 20 minutes. But from what we're watching, from what we're hearing from the players and the coaches, I'm really excited.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Madison. Yes, I was like, wait, they're letting us stay here for team? What?
Oh, my goodness,
hit the jackpot. Yeah, but just that glimpse, I'm with you. I mean, it seems like a confident team. Like you said, there's a clear, you know, leader in Hendon Hooker. I also, I couldn't help but notice, you know, of course, you're always looking at the freshmen, right? The newcomers and things. I couldn't help but notice Squirrel White, Dylan Sampson, two guys who really stood out to me. What about those two and anyone else that you've seen this week that you're like, oh, okay, this guy could be interesting? I know there's a lot of competition at cornerback.
Oh, absolutely. No, Squirrel White has impressed me a ton. And yeah, you saw Monday, he's not big, for lack of a better word. He when he stands next to Cedric Tillman and Jalen Hyatt, you can definitely see that he's, you know, 5'10", 160 pounds, but he's explosive, and that's what you want in a wideout, right? So he's quick off the line, he's quick with the ball in his hands, and he was telling us Tuesday when we spoke with him that he clocked out this preseason at 23.6 miles per hour, which is wild to see in a freshman. Yeah, pretty good, right? So definitely, there's a lot of question, you know, who's going to make up for Bayless Jones Jr. and Javonte Payton, those two combined for roughly 100 yards per game last year. So now there is a competition in the slot with the wide receivers. And when we watched on Monday, we saw Cedric Tillman and Ramel Keaton starting on the outside and then Jalen Hyatt playing the slot. That's kind of what I've been seeing in practice. But Squirrel White and Brew McCoy are two guys that I think are going to come in, make an immediate impact. Coach Heupel said that Squirrel White is fearless, so that's obviously what you want out of a freshman. And so, and then you bring up Dylan Sampson. There's a lot of question marks too around the running back position. It's the thinnest group across the board for this team. We just saw that they got Lynn J. Dixon yesterday, which is huge. We're hearing that he could be on campus pretty soon, ready to take reps next week, if even that long. So I think that that's a huge gain for them. And we'll kind of take a lot of the hits off Jabari Small, because obviously losing Tyon Evans was a big blow. And so to have a guy like Lynn J. Dixon come in, Dylan Sampson, make those, and Justin Williams Thomas as well, make those immediate impacts and just kind of excite this running back group, I think that's what they need right now.
Madison Hawk from WBIR in Knoxville on with us here on Robbie and Rextro. So, Madison, as you look at this defense and the pieces that they have to replace, specifically in Elante Taylor and Theo Jackson heading into this season, what's your concern level? How equipped do you think the Vols are to handle that heading into this year?
Yeah, well, the stress right now is around playing third and long defense, and we saw how they executed that last year. That's something that's definitely been a point of emphasis in practice already. But I will say they're so much more deeper this year than they were this time last year. I think that that's positive, number one. You have Byron Young and Tyler Barron, who are two huge leaders for the Vols, and I think that they've kind of been the spark in practice. I saw them leading some of the younger guys in drills and just getting in their face and saying, hey, you know, we need you. You've got to perform. And Trayvon Flowers is a guy that's going to have to make up for Elante Taylor gone. And Theo Jackson, he's a guy that I talked to him on Sunday as well. And we bring up the playbook. He was saying, you know what, Madison, I'm just so much more confident with the playbook and knowing what this Tim Banks defense wants from me. And since Tim Banks has gotten here from day one, he said, we want all of our defensive backs to be versatile. We don't need corners. We don't need safeties. We need them all to play defensive backs in the backfield. And so I think that that's something that Trayvon, he said, has really challenged himself in the offseason, is just to know multiple different positions. He also told me, you know, that starts at the line, and that's where we got to have Byron Young and Tyler Barron really stepping up and really holding everyone accountable. But I think the confidence in the defense is so much bigger. We heard from Rodney Garner yesterday and the defensive line coach, and, you know, he's a go-getter. He'll get in your face, and he'll correct you right away if you're not doing what they want you to do. And I think he's holding guys accountable. I think he's leading along these freshmen. And you know, I'm feeling much more confident, not to sound like a homer at all, but I'm feeling much more confident in the defense where they're at right now.
So I see Madison where, let's see, season tickets, what, about 7,000 more, 57,000, is that right? What, 17,000 new? Which again speaks to me, one, a success-starred fan base, but also a fan base that absolutely responds to, you know, to anything good that starts happening. What is it like? What's your sense for the fan base and how people are viewing this season and this tenure? I mean, that says a lot to me. But what's your sense around Knoxville of just the feeling? Because I do feel like we've seen other coaches where things look good early, and then, you know, it goes the other way and people turn on a coach. What's your sense for that?
Yeah, well, they've sold, like you said, 58,000 total season tickets, which is 5% more than their targeted goal. So I think that says how excited the community of Knoxville is, but, you know, that's what everyone lives, eats, and breathes here is UT football, and they're wanting a successful season. I was having a conversation with a fan yesterday, and we were talking, you know, would you rather go 8-4 but beat, you know, one of the big three, Alabama, Florida, or Georgia, or would you rather go 9-3 but lose to all three? And I thought that was a fun conversation because I really think fans around here maybe would rather go 8-4 but beat one of the big three. They just want to see Heupel beat Alabama, Florida, or Georgia. But I think, too, the season tickets and just the pulse around this community, I think a lot of that does have to do with athletics director Danny White. He's done a great job getting fans involved in every sport, but especially football. And I think that, you know, if they could just start out strong, Pitt is going to be an early challenge for them. But if they can start out strong, you know, that's what everyone cares about around here. They want this team to do well. And I think that hopefully this Heupel staff can deliver that this year.
Madison, last thing here for you. What sort of a jump are you expecting from Jalin Hyatt this year? Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about him this offseason. Not a good year from him last year. What sort of a jump are you expecting from Jalin Hyatt in the slot this year?
Yeah, well, he's got to have a big jump, right? Because like you said, last year wasn't really what people were expecting. He has put on a lot of weight. When I was talking to him Sunday, he said, you know, I really spent a lot of time in the offseason just trying to get stronger. He's still thin, though. I mean, just, you know, honestly to say, he is. He still needs to bulk up a little bit. He said he's trying to before the season. But I think that he does. That slot competition, it's big right now, and he needs to have a big camp. He needs to execute well, and he's another guy that just spent a lot of the time in the offseason knowing the ins and outs of his playbook. Because he was telling me he feels if he can know that, if he can play multiple positions at wide out, outside, or the slot, that he feels like he'll get more reps. But, you know, we talked about it with Squirrel White. There's a big gap right now in who Hendon Hooker's number two guy is going to be. We know Tillman's going to get a lot of the balls, the majority of the balls, but who's going to fill that second position? And I really think it will be Jalin Hyatt early on. And then maybe when some of these guys get more comfortable with the system and the playbook, they might be competing more. But right now in practice, at least the last 4 days, it's been Cedric Tillman, Jalin Hyatt. So I know that they want him to have a big camp, and they really want him to explode this year.
Well, Madison, great stuff. Really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Y'all have a great day.
Thanks, Madison.
Absolutely. You as well. Madison Hawk from WBIR Knoxville, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Coming up next, it's time for the best and worst things in sports for this week. We'll take your thoughts and your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for the best and worst things in the world of sports. As always, we'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexrode, who, by the way, if you're checking out our video stream, brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry, Rexrode is looking fantastic today. The hair is great. It's great stuff. Our fearless leader, Joe Rexrode, would you like to kick us off?
Thank you. I wonder what I did. You're right. There's a little extra swoosh there. A little swoosh in the hair. Appreciate you noticing. I always hope that you guys will notice. You know, I'm trying to look nice. Trying to look nice for you guys. So
well, I noticed it in the pre-show meeting this morning, and it's carried through.
Well, that's the thing. As much as we rehearsed every segment, and in some cases thrashing around, you know, I mean, to keep the hair this good, not an easy task.
See if you can survive Stillman coming up next with the hair, too.
Yeah, yeah, half of it will be pulled out by 7:15. So, best and worst thing. So, I'm sorry to do this to you, Michelle, because you know what I'm going to do.
I know exactly what you're going to do. You're going to steal my worst in sports.
I'm going to steal your best in sports.
Oh.
But maybe not. And if not, then that's good. My best in sports is the Kentucky basketball team.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with you this week?
Well, hold on now. Hold on. Along with being, because they've helped support the third best program in the SEC East. No, I'm just kidding. The football program. Now, horrible, horrible flooding in eastern Kentucky. So, I mean, so many people missing still as we speak. And I don't know the latest number, but John Calipari and his guy, I know they're over 2 million.
They're over 3 now.
They're over 3 now. And they're able to – this is some things like – so in the past, you wouldn't be able to do everything they've done. Because of idiotic NCAA rules, like that's I always loved that when like dumbass NCAA rules would like undercut a charity, you know, opportunity.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. It's just like okay, just take the whole rule book and throw it in the ocean. But good on Kentucky. This gets people excited in that state, raised tons of money, trying to help those people out. So that's my best. My worst is I'm probably gonna steal this too. I really love going first.
Let me guess, Paige Beckers.
You know what? It's not. But that is awful. No, my worst is just it's the Watson. It's me punching a mic while I'm trying to talk, and it's the Watson reaction, which I think is for the most part it's not widespread. But like for example, let me call out Anthony the Plumber because I just looked at our text line this morning, and this is actually from yesterday. This is during Jared's show. You know, quote: "What happened to innocent until proven guilty? That's what's wrong with y'all now. So quick to judge." End quote. So quick to judge. Now there hasn't
been going on for 2 years.
I mean, come on. And just like the, like I said earlier, the Browns fans, it's going to be mute city around here, man, to handle some of this stuff. But just the reaction, I mean, Sue L. Robinson too, all of it, that's an easy worst.
Michelle Konezvic, your best and worst things in the world of sports.
Okay, so I kind of had two worst, obviously the Deshaun thing, but Browns fans in particular, because I have spoken to people I know who are Browns fans, and I've said, you know, how are you going to approach this, right? He's your quarterback, right? I just want to gauge people's perspective on it. And a lot, like I've heard, I'm just going to pretend I don't know what happened and all this stuff. And I think that is the absolute worst answer, because being ignorant to a situation like that and whatever, you want to cheer for the Browns, cool. But just to be like, oh, I'm just going to pretend that he's not a sexual predator out there and he's just my quarterback, and that's awful. Also, the Paige Beckers thing, tore her ACL, same leg, in under 2 years. She's arguably one of the most influential women's basketball players, I would say, combined with the WNBA and women's college basketball. She's got NIL deals with Gatorade. This is where NIL helps, because with this torn ACL, she could have, who knows what her basketball career is going to look like moving forward if she'll play in the WNBA. So just really sad to see her go down yesterday, another torn ACL.
In a pickup game, too. That sucks.
Yeah, just awful. And she makes the game fun. She makes people want to watch her.
Yes.
So she's just, it just sucks not to be able to see her coming up this year. And then my best in sports, Joe, you're right, Kentucky basketball. If you look at some of the pictures just from Eastern Kentucky right now, it's just so incredibly awful. The town's basically underwater, but they're able to raise a lot of money to hopefully help, rebuild that area. Then also they got Mark Few on to, help raise the hype. They're playing Gonzaga this year, so that's a little scary, but yeah, exciting. All for a good cause, though. So
it's sports. It's like the good of sports, you know. Like yeah. Fandom can be like the Browns stuff, you know. But then it can also when there's something good to do. It's like UT fans too, and some of the stuff like what they did for Zakai Ziegler, for example, right? I mean, that's where sports incredible. Is at its best. Sorry,
Robbie, my best. You're good. So my best in sports, it's a couple of things. Number one, we haven't really talked about this, but the Juan Soto trade going from Washington to the Padres. I love gigantic trades in sports, and that one was huge. I mean, the prospects that Washington got back, there's a ton of them, and obviously Juan Soto. When you have Machado there, you've got Tatis there in San Diego, and you've got Juan Soto there as well. Like, they ought to be pretty good for a while. And if they're not, people are going to be pretty mad. I will also say this. Watching Christian Vasquez of the Red Sox get traded to the Astros the other night while they were playing against the Astros was pretty awesome.
That was like, interesting.
I love the – and it doesn't happen a lot anymore in sports, but it's happened before, certainly in baseball. It's happened in hockey before where it's like, hey, we're going to trade you. And by the way, the team that we're trading you to is right down the other end of that hallway over there. So pack up your stuff.
Yeah, Dave. Nope, no, don't you. Hey, don't take that pen. Come on, that's our pen.
That's right. Well, he got mobbed by the by the media. Like,
he's
right
like, I guess I got traded.
He had no clue. Like, he was trying to gather. Like, somebody had to come get him. He was like trying to gather himself. It was really interesting with Christian Vasquez the other day. And then my worst thing in sports, as you guys mentioned, there's a lot of options this week for the worst thing in sports. But I'll go with Bill Russell and Vin Scully passing away. Obviously, you know, it's been sad to see that. Now, I will say this. It's been cool from my perspective, and obviously you want the circumstances to be different. But to just see the reaction of the impact that both of those guys had, two different sports, two different roles. But Bill Russell, you know, no pun intended, was a giant in the world of the NBA in terms of what he accomplished on the court, but also what he fought through and paved the way for in the NBA as well. And then there's Vin Scully, who is on the short list of greatest broadcasters of all time, regardless of what the sport is. The reaction for two guys that were pretty universally loved, like a lot of people have talked about Bill Russell and just the stubbornness that he had, but also how funny that made Bill Russell as well. It's a very sad situation that they, as we pointed out, they lived great lives, and the reaction of the stories that have poured in the last couple of days, I think has been a cool part of a sad situation.
Yes, it's a absolute must have as a worst. I would also put in the best category some of the things that I've been able to read this week about both of them. There's a ton, two that come to mind: Jemele Hill in the Atlantic on Bill Russell, Bill Plaschke in the LA Times on Vin Scully. Those are two things to seek out, but there's a ton on both that really capture how important they were in so many different ways.
Yep, no question about it. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This has been the best and worst things in sports. You can catch it every Thursday morning at 645 here on Robbie and Rexro. Coming up next, a segment that Joe Rexroad's highly looking forward to. We'll be joined by our good friend Jared Stillman from Stillman & Company. That's coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.